the nature of the data is quite serious if it is, in fact, a true report.
North Korean hackers allegedly stole sensitive military plans. It's Thursday, October 12th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson. Hello and welcome. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, human rights issues, a concern for Rohingyas. Pakistani girls attend pop-up schools. Philippines lawmaker goes after China. Fields of pain for farmers. The latest in Asia business. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A South Korean lawmaker revealed Wednesday North Korean hackers penetrated the South's Defense Integrated Data Center last year and stole hundreds of gigabytes of military documents, including Operational Plans 5015. That's a document to destroy the North's leadership. Ruling Democratic Party Representative Ray Cho-hee, who sits on the National Defense Committee, citing defense officials, said most of the data had not yet been identified, but said none of the information was highly classified. Neither the South Koreans or U.S. military commented immediately on the lawmaker's statements. The New York Times reported this is the latest instance of North Korea's ongoing cyber warfare. In this case, it launched an attack codenamed Desert Wolf, infecting thousands of computers operating out of IP addresses in China. Cedric Layton operates his own crisis management consultancy and served as an intelligence officer in the U.S. Air Force. He spoke with VOA's Victor Beatty.
What is interesting to me about this is that this kind of data was not kept on a more secure network. If it was, in fact, kept on a network that would appear to be minimal security protocols surrounding it, then that's a serious security breach on the part of the South Koreans. The basic data that is listed here is smaller than the amount that Edward Snowden leaked from the NSA. It's smaller than some of the other contractors have leaked from NSA. So it is, while large, it is not the biggest trove of data in terms of amount that has ever been seen before. But the nature of the data is quite serious if it is, in fact, a true report.
Well, the Pentagon has not responded yet, not commented, even though it's aware of the report. Obviously, there must be some assessment underway as to what we should share with the South Koreans.
Absolutely. Well, it's always been a question of how much to share with your allies and when to share it. The allies that we have in South Korea are considered among our closest allies, and we have a historic partnership that goes back many, many years where intelligence collection efforts are actually shared in some units, South Korean and U.S. Soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines are actually sitting side by side in intelligence collection efforts. So this relationship goes back really all the way to the Korean War, and it's been further refined through the years, and it's a very close sharing of classified information. But of course, if something like this happened and the data is in fact as sensitive as it appears to be, that would certainly call into question at least the security protocols surrounding the current arrangement.
Well, this again points up the prowess of North Korean hacking efforts.
This particular hack is actually relatively simple, given some of the things that apparently occurred, such as, you know, while maintenance was going on, there was a connection to the regular internet. That in and of itself is a pretty serious security mistake. And if that did happen, then it shows really a fairly easy path for the North Koreans to take. It's not really evidence that they had to mount any real special efforts to get at this data.
Cedric Layton said if hacked, such operational plans would doubtlessly have to be changed, and he finds it curious the South Korean lawmaker would attempt to minimize the importance of the stolen data. He said any such war plans would be normally deemed highly classified. The revelation came as U.S. strategic bombers took part in another show of force drill in the vicinity of the Sea of Japan, as tensions remain high over North Korea's nuclear and missile programs. President Donald Trump met at the White House Tuesday with his national security team. A White House statement said they discussed a range of options to counter any North Korean aggression or how to respond to a nuclear threat to the United States or its allies. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. China's communist leaders seek to bend business to party will. A poll says most say Trump making North Korean situation worse. Trump casts shadow on Japan election. Philippine lawmaker digging up new intelligence on pressure from China. Indonesia bishop resigns in finance and mistress scandal. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, visit our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. A team of United Nations human rights monitors accuses the government of Myanmar of deliberately brutalizing the Rohingya population to force them to leave their homes in northern Rakhine State and not return. A report by the three-member team is based on some 60 interviews with individuals and groups in refugee camps and settlements in Cox's Bazar in neighboring Bangladesh between September 14th and 24th. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the UN Human Rights Office in Geneva.
The report accuses Myanmar of a well-organized, coordinated, and systematic plan to brutally attack the Rohingya population in Rakhine to drive them out of the country and prevent them from returning to their homes. Human Rights Monitor Thomas Hunica says credible information indicates Myanmar security forces, together with armed Rakhine Buddhists, have committed gross human rights violations against the Rohingya Muslims. They include the destruction of property and scorching of dwellings and villages.
The destruction by the Tatmadaw of houses, fields, food stocks, crops, livestock, and even trees render the possibility of the Rohingya returning to normal life and livelihoods in the future in northern Rakhine almost impossible.
Hanneke says Myanmar authorities are trying to erase signs of memorable landmarks and turn the Rohingya landscape into a desolate and unrecognizable area. More than 500,000 Rohingya refugees have fled to Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, since August 25th. That was when security forces in mainly Buddhist Myanmar launched a violent operation in response to alleged attacks by militants against 30 police posts. The report says the so-called clearance operation started as early as the beginning of August, well in advance of the alleged attack in late August. UN Human Rights Chief Zayd Raad al-Hussein has described the government operations in Rakhine as a textbook example of ethnic cleansing. Hanneke tells VOA nothing he has heard or seen would contradict that. Myanmar civilian leader Aung San Suu Kyi has condemned the human rights violations taking place in Rakhine State, but she has come under strong international criticism for not speaking out more forcefully on the situation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Happening now in Asia, Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam said residents have a duty to defend China's sovereignty, a clear warning to activists demanding full democracy for the Chinese territory. Lam also said Hong Kongers are obligated to, quote, nurture our next generation into citizens with a sense of national identity. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always happy that you've spent some time and joined us for VOA Asia. Thank you for listening. October 11th marked the annual United Nations Day of the Girl Child. Its purpose is to highlight the continuing challenges girls face all over the world. One of the biggest is getting an education. VOA's Kevin Enix looks at one pop-up school in Pakistan that's trying to help.
Every morning, 12-year-old Shagufta Nafis heads off to school. It is a long walk and the location is less than ideal. But Nafis is happy to be here.
My parents could not afford to send me to school. We have a big family and we live in a rented house.
That is why my mother got me admitted to the school. I really like studying Urdu and science. In science class, they teach us about various things regarding the world as well as laws. I love science.
It's not an ideal environment, but these teachers say the students are desperate to learn.
All the sound pollution and noise due to traffic is very disturbing. Often the children cannot hear what I'm saying. Most of the children are from the streets, while the rest are from low-income families. But they are extremely hard-working, and we are positive they will do great things in the future.
The founder of this footpath school says she is fighting not just for space, but also against a mindset that often sees girls as moneymakers.
The children who study here are those who were either used for begging or criminal activities, and those who used and abused them do not want them to get educated, as they want to use them as a source of income. Such people try to create hurdles.
Statistics suggest more than 20 million Pakistani children between the ages of 5 and 16 are not in school. But Nafees is determined to beat that statistic.
I want to join the Pakistani army, as not everyone has the good fortune of having the opportunity to make a sacrifice for their country.
Leaders in the nationwide footpath school movement say they have helped enroll more than 200,000 Pakistani children in school, half of them girls. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. India's Supreme Court ruled that a man having sex with his wife under the age of 18 constitutes rape. The landmark ruling changed an exception to a previous law which did not criminalize sex with minors if the two were married. The court did not rule on marital rape, which is not illegal in India. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a Philippine opposition party legislator has been drawing attention for the release of privileged information that suggests China is infringing on offshore islets that the two countries dispute, a potential threat to a recently strengthened diplomatic relationship. But some people reading his feed suspect personal political motives, including an effort to weaken President Rodrigo Duterte. Congressman Gary Alejandro is using social media to spread intelligence gathered on Chinese activity in the South China Sea. The former Marine captain elected in 2013 charged China had planted its flag on a sandbar in Philippine-controlled waters in late July and, in mid-September, chased a Philippine patrol vessel away from three sandbars in the same waters. Alejandro is giving out this information on Facebook and Twitter to remind Filipinos to be careful of their friendship with China, forged under Philippine President Duterte over the past year.
This administration and even the government in China are saying that everything is already okay now that we're talking with each other. There are so many things happening in the West Philippine Sea that are not coming out in the open, and I don't want that our government will just be silent and do nothing.
Duterte and his foreign affairs secretary acknowledged the report of a Chinese flag at Sandy Cay, but said China had not occupied it. The cay is within 22 kilometers of Philippine-held Thitu Island, part of the Spratly Archipelago. The roughly 100 Spratly features belong to the bigger South China Sea. After Alejandro's claims about the chased patrol boat, the defense secretary told Philippine media it was natural that China would be spotted in the Spratlys. Beijing claims more than 90% of the sea extending from its south coast to Borneo. It has alarmed four rival claimants in Southeast Asia by letting Coast Guard vessels operate in disputed waters and by building artificial islands, some for possible deployments of radar systems and combat aircraft. Brunei, Malaysia, and Vietnam, as well as the Philippines, contest many of China's maritime claims. Since a World Arbitration Court ruled last year against the legal basis for much of China's claim, the Beijing government has tried to get along with other countries. Duterte set aside the Philippine maritime dispute with China after taking office in June 2016 to help diversify Manila's foreign policy. In October, China pledged $24 billion in aid and investment to the Philippines, which wants outside help with a five-year infrastructure development plan. Alejandro's reports have gotten attention from a Supreme Chief Justice as well as overseas scholars, including one from the California-based RAND Corporation, who follows South China Sea issues. Jay Botambacol is director of the Institute for Maritime Affairs and Law of the Sea at the University of the Philippines.
For the academia, of course, we're listening because his sources of information would be reliable. My suspicion is that he's getting this information from frustrated military people who are concerned about what's going on in the Spratly region.
The congressman acknowledged friends in the military but declined to disclose his sources. He said he talked to fishermen in March and April to document what he called harassment by the Chinese. Colin Koh, a maritime security research fellow at Nanyang Technological University in Singapore, says calling attention to the Chinese activity in the sea should deter China from testing its luck.
I think to some extent it will serve as sort of a deterrent, because one thing is that if you look at the previous modus operandi, the Chinese will always want to bet on their other victim, keeping quiet and trying to keep a low profile, downplaying this incident, not even publicizing it.
China has also vexed countries such as Indonesia and Malaysia by moving ships through disputed waters despite overall friendly ties. Those countries seldom challenge China in public. Alejandro also filed a complaint earlier this year to impeach Duterte after learning that the president knew Chinese research vessels had parked off the Philippine Pacific coast in 2016. The government sometimes withholds information, he said. Quote, we want Duterte to be accountable to the people. Alejandro, who is allied with the former anti-government protester Senator Antonio Trillanes, may be seeking attention through social media to win a future Senate race, according to some analysts. Alejandro said he has not made such plans. Eduardo Aral, associate professor at the National University of Singapore's Public Policy School, does not put much stock in his statements.
I wouldn't give much credence to this guy. His group is out to bring down President Duterte, that's very clear. And he wants to inherit the mantle of Senator Trillanes by posing as a tough guy.
But academics say the congressman's reports will likely keep coming and being heard. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei for sending us this story. This news alert from VOA Asia. The U.S. Navy says the commander and the executive officer of the USS John S. McCain have been relieved of their duties in the aftermath of the destroyer's deadly collision with an oil tanker near Singapore in August. 10 sailors were killed, 5 others injured in the incident. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, while U.S. stock indexes continue to see record-breaking gains and U.S. employment numbers are encouraging, American farmers continue to struggle with high costs for fertilizer and seed at a time when demand and prices for their products are low. As VOA's Kane Faribault reports, the economic hardship has a ripple effect beyond the farmers' fields.
The annual Farm Progress Show, this year in Decatur, Illinois, is one of the largest farming exhibitions in the world. It's where manufacturers and suppliers show off their latest products and equipment. It's a starting point for farmers researching what big-ticket items are available to make their work in the fields more efficient and easier. But all farmer Jeff Fisher can do at the John Deere exhibit is look.
$250,000 list price for this planter, and this is just a medium-sized planter. I'm interested in a planter a notch below this planter. The commodity prices aren't high enough to be able to afford it.
It's been over 5 years since Fisher's been able to afford new equipment. That was the last time he made a profit.
We're losing money. Our cost of production is higher than the price of corn on the Chicago Board of Trade and our local price.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture reports median net farm income in 2016 was the lowest since 2009, but projects a modest increase overall for 2017. But the year-over-year hardship for many U.S. farmers has affected more than just the agricultural industry.
The Equipment Manufacturers Association released some pretty dismal numbers for farm equipment sales and what that means to the caterpillar and deer. That's troublesome.
Tamara Nelson is the Senior Director of Commodities for the Illinois Farm Bureau. She says a decline in equipment sales affects manufacturing jobs that depend on farmers like Fisher buying new equipment.
If a farmer cannot afford to buy this, then those 25 workers that work to make it, and the steel workers who produce the steel, and all of the people involved in the parts, they are not going to have jobs either. And so farmers need to have good markets, just as manufacturers need to have good markets.
Mark Bremer grows corn and soybeans on his southern Illinois farm and also raises livestock. Like Fisher, he's also getting by using old equipment to make ends meet.
We would love to update. We'd love to purchase new technology and stuff, but that technology comes with a price. They didn't develop it free.
Bremer isn't sure when he'll be able to afford new equipment and is worried about the crop yield this year due to lack of rainfall.
We're not guaranteed the rain, we're not guaranteed the price, we're not guaranteed the yield either, so it's just a continual challenge of making it.
There's also no guarantee next year will be better, but farmer Jeff Fisher still has hope.
We're in the bottom of that roller coaster ride, it feels like right now. I hope it doesn't get worse.
But his roller coaster ride continues in just a few weeks as the next and perhaps most important phase of his work as a farmer begins, harvesting this year's corn and soybeans. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Decatur, Illinois.
It's time for VOA Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
This is Business Scene. I'm Skylar Ogden. In South Korea, people aged 65 or older account for more than 14% of the population. The statistic concerns the South Korean government as they watch yet another trend steadily rising, the number of single-person households. By late 2016, the number of one-person households accounted for 27.9% of the country's total population.
They tend to spend much more on living alone. Lonely dwellers tend to part with money for their own lives and for pursuing entry-level luxury consumption.
While singles might not be good news for the country's pension fund, studies show they are good for the GDP. Analysts say that based on current trends, by 2030, annual spending by single-person households will top 194 trillion won, or $1.7 billion, to account for nearly one-fifth of the nation's total consumption. But what's good for the GDP isn't always good for those spending the dollars. Surveys show South Koreans living alone do so out of fear they won't find a job, won't make enough money, and won't be able to afford a family.
Even if I got married, I might have been bogged down into such burdensome expenses as raising and educating offspring.
As the economy sputters and single life becomes more popular, questions remain about who will shoulder the costs of rising pension burdens and an aging population. Government efforts to reduce beetle farming in Taiwan are having success as more farmers on the island turn to different crops. Of the nearly 43,000 hectares of beetle plantations, 435 have changed crops under the initiative. The betel nut is a carcinogen and is linked to oral cancer. As the government incentivizes people with subsidies, it expects more farmers to leave betel nut farming.
For the older farmers, you can't harvest the oilseed camellia until after 5 years, so it's a heavier burden.
The government now gives farmers like Huang as much as $8,315 per hectare if they convert to other crops. After growing betel nuts for years, Huang now grows oilseed camellia, which produces an edible extract often linked to olive oil. But critics say the government efforts aren't enough.
We can't just ignore the livelihoods of these growers and vendors. It needs more coordination between education, agricultural, and economic departments.
While government efforts haven't made a significant dent in the beetle farming industry yet, Taiwan's Agriculture and Food Agency says subsidy applications have gone up this year. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We say hello to everyone listening on Falcon Radio at Adamson University in the Philippines. Thanks for joining us today. You can write to us, if you like, on Facebook at VOA Asia. It's a great way to send us a message and let us know what's going on in your part of the world. We can also get an email, if you like. VOA Asia at voanews.com is our address. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Jim Harmon, managing editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, David Bird, and Skylar Ogden on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.